Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Ethos Capital Interim Results. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Peter Hayward-Butt. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and thanks to all the investors for logging in. I know it's a busy time out there. I'm sure many of you are looking at your screens this morning. So I will try and keep it relatively short and very happy to answer questions either, you know, on the call or afterwards. In terms of the presentation for the day, you know, what we want to cover, we'll just give you an introduction and an overview. You know, obviously it's somewhat historic looking back to the 31st of December. Lots has happened since then, as you all know. We'll also try and touch a bit on, you know, what are the ramifications for the Ethos Capital portfolio of what we've seen over the last couple of months. We'll give you a quick portfolio overview pre and post the Brait transaction, which was completed in February. A brief look at the valuation of the portfolio and what's happened since June to December, and probably an outlook going forward from there. As usual, just we'll touch on the liquidity analysis post the Brait transaction. And then just give you, there are a couple of slides which we'll touch on, you know, what's happening with the Brait transaction and where we are in that transaction. So moving on to the slides, an overview of the last 6 months and the market outlook. Yeah, I don't think we need to tell anyone just how difficult it's been in SA between load shedding, obviously the recessionary environment and consumer and producer confidence at not quite all-time lows, but pretty much all-time lows. And also coupled with, you know, continuing cost inflation, which hasn't gone away, has made obviously the second half of last year and, to be honest, the start of this year an extremely difficult operating environment in SA. We'll touch on the implications of that for the portfolio. Outside of South Africa, however, growth rates have remained strong. You know, our assets that are in those regions have benefited from that. That said, I think with the risk-off nature of the markets in the last couple of months, currency volatility and lower oil prices have obviously increased the risk profile for some of those territories. And again, we will touch on those for the individual assets. In terms of NAV, the NAV was largely flat, grew 1% since June, which, you know, in the current environment is probably not the worst result. EBITDA actually grew on an attributable basis by about 3.2%. And again, a lot of that was from cost-cutting and repositioning initiatives in the various portfolio companies. So between EBITDA and de-gearing, as you will see later in the presentation, the gearing of the portfolio fell from about 1.9 times EBITDA down to 1.6, which was pleasing. So those two had a positive impact on valuations. We brought the valuation multiples down to December. And again, I'll touch on what's the outlook for that post-December. We reduced the multiples, and I think the average on the portfolio reduced from 6.9 to 6.7 as at June, which resulted in around about a 1% NAV growth. Post the Brait transaction, we will be, you know, completely invested the capital that we've raised, so about 2.7 billion rand of total assets. We have an RMB facility, which was finalized in the last quarter of last year, which gives us additional firepower. But as it stands today, we are now finally 100% invested at about 2.7 billion rand of total assets. The focus on the funds really has moved probably over the last 6 months to monetization, and this applies not just to the funds, but, you know, the Ethos Capital's board's view on what we should be doing given the current discount to NAV. And I think it's important to say to shareholders the resolution of the board really is to focus on monetizing the current portfolio before making any new commitments to any new funds. So getting capital back to shareholders is an absolute priority for, you know, for the board and the funds. Obviously, no one's unaware of coronavirus and the impacts that's had, you know, not just the direct impacts, but the indirect impacts it's had on companies globally. We are not averse to that. You know, we have companies that are in different sectors. Obviously, some are impacted directly, and I'll try and touch on that when we touch on some of the more the sizable assets in the portfolio. But obviously, there's second-degree impacts of this coronavirus, whether it be, you know, oil prices, whether it be the impact it has on the consumer, et cetera. And I think our entire portfolio will be impacted both from a profitability perspective, but also going forward from a rating perspective by the last couple of months and what's happened on the coronavirus side. But again, I'll touch on that during the course of the presentation. Just a high-level overview of the, you know, the results. We currently have 19 portfolio companies. We will have 24 portfolio companies post the Brait transaction. So as of today, we have 24 companies in the portfolio. Importantly, eight of those companies make up 80% of the portfolio, and today I'm going to focus pretty much our presentation on the eight as opposed to the tail of the portfolio companies. As I said, NAV per share at the end of December was 11.48, which results in the 1% increase NAV over the 6 months. EV/EBITDA decreased over that time. We reduced the multiples. Effectively, we increased the discount to the peer group. Again, I'll touch on that later. The multiples reduced from 6.9 to 6.7 times EBITDA, with net debt to EBITDA falling from 1.9 to 1.6 times, so some de-gearing in the portfolio. I will touch later on what's happened to multiples, you know, in the course of the last 2 months post-December, you know, but broadly what we would expect is around about a 10% reduction probably in the EV/EBITDA multiples, but only probably for 50% of the portfolio. Some of the portfolio companies remain somewhat unaffected by the ratings. And again, we'll touch on that later, but certainly there's been some compression in multiples since December. The capital invested as of December was $1.7 billion, which increased on the right-hand side to $2.7 billion post the Brait transaction. And as I mentioned before, from a total assets perspective as of December, that number was just under $2 billion at $1.96 billion, has increased to $2.7 billion. Post the Brait transaction. From an invested capital perspective, as of December, we were 86% invested, and that number is now 100% post the Brait transaction. As I mentioned again, there's a liquidity facility that allows us to draw up to $700 million from RMB. Talking about the portfolio, over the last 6 months leading up to December, there was investments of about 253 on a net basis. Across the portfolio. So as of June, we had 1.4 billion rand invested. At the end of December, that number had grown to just under 1.7 billion, so 253 million of investments made. Predominantly, that was in Channel VAS. So Channel VAS net increased by 20 million, but it's probably important to say we used dividends that we had received during the course of the 6 months to increase our stake from 17% to 20%. So the 20 million that you see as an increase there, actually, the number was about 85 million rand that we increased our stake there, but we actually used the dividends that we received for 65 million to increase our stake plus an additional 20 million. So we're now a shareholder of 20% in Channel VAS, and very excitingly, that was done at the valuation we agreed 18 months ago on the transaction, so much lower in price for us to increase our stake in that business, and it continues to perform well. Echo, the 133 there was the Gondwana transaction, which happened and completed just before December, which was an acquisition of nine companies across nine jurisdictions in Africa. Echo really has given them a sub-Saharan African presence. The transaction probably took 12 months to close. There are one or two jurisdictions which still remain subject to their internal competition commission issues, but predominantly the main part of the transaction closed during the back end of last year. Vertice, we invested about 58 million rand in Vertice, effectively two new acquisitions, but also some product growth. We'll touch on that later. It's been very pleasing, the growth in that business, both from the acquisition but organically as well. And then the rest is particularly around the portfolio. There were a number of companies which we required putting more capital in for growth projects, and that got us to an NAV of 1.68 billion invested capital as of December. Post-December, you would have seen the Brait transaction. We raised capital. The transaction completed, the 750 million rights issue completed in February. We invested about R1 billion into the Brait transaction. And again, I'll touch on that later. We have had some proceeds back from Eaton Towers since the end of the year, but our invested capital will be around about 2.7 billion on a pro forma basis. If we touch on the makeup of the portfolio, pre the Brait transaction, and I won't dwell too much on this because obviously it's somewhat historic looking. It gives you a flavor for which are the key assets in the portfolio. And on this page, what we also try and show is which of those assets have we owned for less than 2 years and which have we owned for more than 2 years, giving some indication of where they are in their value accretion and realization cycle. Around about 55% odd of the assets we've owned for less than 2 years, about 30-odd% of the assets we've owned for more than 2 years. The rest obviously resides in cash. And if you look at the distribution of the portfolio, 60% of the portfolio economics reside in South Africa, with about 40-odd percent in sub-Saharan Africa. You do the same analysis for the break, post the break transaction. You'll see that the portfolio composition changes quite significantly. The two key assets in the break portfolio really are Virgin and Premier, which together would be 23 and 10% of the portfolio. And quite pleasingly, that about 70, call it 80-odd percent of the total asset base resides in eight portfolio companies. And when we talk today later, I'll give you some indication of how those eight portfolio companies are performing. Obviously, there's a relatively large tail to the business. If you look from a diversification perspective, 63% of the portfolio is SA-based in terms of the economics, about 24 sub-Saharan Africa, and around about 13 international, which effectively is the UK, Asia-Pacific, and Europe. From a diversification perspective, obviously there are a number of our assets which are major beneficiaries of a weaker rand, whether that be against the dollar or the pound. Brait's assets in the form of, you know, Virgin in particular, obviously is a major beneficiary of a weaker ZAR pound. And Channel VAS is obviously a beneficiary from a weaker rand dollar. So the movements we've seen over the last quarter would obviously have a positive impact on those, you know, everything else status quo. Just a quick update on some of the key portfolio companies. Channel VAS is around about 23% of total assets pre the break transaction, about 17% post the break transaction. The business continues to perform well. If you look at the bottom of the page, the EBITDA performance was about 17% year-on-year growth in dollars up to December. That was largely as a result of new deployments and obviously further higher penetration. And as the scorecards improve in some of the credit rating models, we're able to penetrate higher, you know, into the customer base of those MNOs. If you look at the daily advances grew to about $1.82 billion from $1.36 billion over the last 12 months, which is around about a 35% growth, which is very pleasing. So we've added about five new deployments over the last 6 months, and the business continues to perform well. In the quarter, or the last 6 months, sorry, we increased the valuation by $38 million. That was moderated significantly by a strengthening rand, surprising in the current environment, which in the last quarter strengthened around about 7.5%, down to 14 rand to the dollar as of December. So that obviously had a moderating impact on the valuation of Channel VAS. Since the 31st of December, there's been about a 16% depreciation in the rand, which would obviously in the next quarter have a positive impact on Channel VAS's performance. So again, we're positive about the asset. It continues to grow. There's been some decent progress in the mobile financial services part of the business, which quadrupled its revenue, albeit off an extremely low base, so don't get too excited, but we're starting to see some benefits there. And as we said, if we can get that right, this really would be a great asset in time to be able to monetize real value from. There were around $6 million of dividends declared on the 31st of December, which we will receive during this quarter. So positive performance from Channel VAS. If you look at Kevro is actually probably the opposite of that. It's been a very, very tough second half of the year, but equally pertinently probably the first 2 months of this year. There have been supply issues really around warehouse migration and the IT systems. So, you know, getting that right, we always said trying to get all of our stock into one warehouse was a strategic imperative for the business. That has now happened. It's not without its issues, but it's now happened, and we're positive that now we're under one roof, which will be done by the end of this month. That really will help the efficiencies in the business. And we spent a huge amount of money, well, for this business's case, a significant amount of money on the IT systems. There have, as usual, in these sorts of things, been some teething problems, but we would hope that, you know, towards the end of March and April, both being in one warehouse with the IT systems in place, that really will have a positive impact on the business and the efficiencies. The demand side of the business has held up relatively well, to be honest. The demand side is probably above where we were last year. Really, for us, the key issue at the moment is sourcing stock. Obviously, it sources a lot of its stock from China. You know, that for 3 or 4 weeks came to a grinding halt. It has started again, but, you know, it will have an impact on our ability to supply our customers, you know, over that period of time. So demand remains relatively good and actually up on last year, which is a positive. But, you know, the business has had supply issues which will impact profitability and EBITDA, you know, during the, it has already over the last 6 months, but will continue to do so. This is one business which I think from a multiples perspective, you know, we have our eye on. I do think, you know, its peers and peers have also come under pressure, and this is probably one asset that will, you know, we will need to relook at the multiple we hold it at during the, at the end of March. If you take Primedia, Primedia actually, from a perspective of market share, has held up well. It's increased its market share, again, pleasingly in the last 6 months. That said, across outdoor and radio, you know, those markets have both been under significant pressure. I think the radio market was down about 4% year on year. We were down about 1%, so effectively increased our market share. But we've seen advertising spend across all of our customers come under pressure, whether that be in the outdoor business or in the radio business. We spent a huge amount of time with management there focusing on optimizing the cost base and ensuring we have a platform there that's fit for purpose. And, you know, that will have significant implications going forward. If you look, Primedia's EBITDA probably was down 7%. You know, if you include Steerclinical year on year, Steerclinical actually had a very positive performance in the 6 months to December. There has been deleveraging in the business, which continues, and the cost optimization program will obviously help alleviate some of the issues. But Primedia, as we've always said, is a GDP play. It remains under pressure, both at a revenue and an EBITDA base in the current environment. If you look at Echo, Echo is the corporate ISP business that I referred to earlier. We bought the Gondwana business, which completed just before the end of the year. So if you look at the Ethos Capital, invested capital in this is about 159 million. The current valuation sits at about 170. So we wrote that slightly during the 6 months. The performance really has been very strong in the business. You'll see on that page, you know, we talk about the real measure of performance in this business is the sales growth. And if you look, they achieved nearly 150% of their target in the first 9 months of the year, which is very pleasing. Clearly turning those, that pipeline into revenue is key, is a key actionable item for the management team, and they continue to work on that. So there's probably a 6 to 12 month lag from getting a, from winning a client to actually getting money into the tills. But EBITDA year on year was up 24%, very pleasingly. So again, the business is performing well from a core perspective. We would hope now that the Gondwana transaction is complete, you know, that we can play in the bigger bigger field regarding some of the MNCs in this country and elsewhere providing their services across the continent. So pleasing performance. We wrote the valuation up slightly, really just because EBITDA was up and gross revenues are pointed in the right direction. Touching on Vertice, Vertice is the medical technology business that we started probably 2 years ago. For those of you who remember, it probably had 30-odd million of EBITDA when we bought it. I think the target for this year will be 120 million rand. So the business really has performed well. There were two acquisitions completed during the last 6 months, which added new verticals to the business. We completed a BE deal. It's imperative in this industry to have BE. We are now level four, I think, which is very positive and will give us a significant competitive advantage across most of our competitors. Massive integration of the acquisitions and warehouse and logistics consolidation has happened. This has been successfully done and with significant savings in the business. And a lot of new products have been started between stents and wound care, which have had made great progress organically in the business. So it's the growth has not just come from acquisition, but equally from organic growth. And if you look at the organic growth, it's been around about 23% in turnover year on year, and nearly 40% from an EBIT perspective. So like for like, the business continues to perform well. Three new deals concluded over the last 6 months, and a decent pipeline looking forward. Quite exciting in this business was we launched our first AI-driven diagnostics product in the cardiology segment, which has been very, very well received, you know, from doctors and the like. And it's, again, an example of where, you know, we can work with our AI team with Roger and Nick on really helping this business move on to, you know, onto greater things. If you look at the change in value, it's about 29 million up on the 6 months, and it now contributes around about 8% of Ethos's total assets. And last one I'll touch on of the major assets is Synalytic. Synalytic we bought just over a year ago. The Weir Check, which is predominantly 80-odd percent or was 80% of the business, really has continued to perform strongly in line with our expectations at the time of the acquisition. We also acquired Anglo Field Services as a business, a complementary business adjacency to put into Synerlytic. It's integrated very well, lots of cross-sell opportunities, and it's outperforming our expectations in the first 8 months of ownership, which is very positive. And Amos, which is the referencing materials business, had very strong EBITDA growth, probably ahead of our expectations when we bought the business. And then finally, there was a decent rationalization of the head office costs that we inherited from Tor. So across all of those, the business continued to perform well. The last 6 months, we marked it up by 18 million rand, and it now constitutes around 6% of Ethos's total assets. The business also is looking at a couple of acquisitions, small bolt-on acquisitions, similar to the Anglo Field Services, which are complementary adjacencies to the current portfolio. Just briefly moving on to valuation. You move to page 15 of the presentation. In terms of the NAV is currently, as we said, 11.48 as of December. As of December, we were 86% invested. As I said, it's now 100% invested post the Brait transaction and the rights issue. The current discount as of December, when the share price was at 7.50 odd, was about 34% to NAV. That's obviously blown out, and I'll touch a bit on that later. The key valuation metrics across the portfolio on an attributable basis, the EV/EBITDA came down from 6.9 to 6.7. Net debt dropped from 1.9 to 1.6, showing some deleveraging in the portfolios. The discount increased to 34% from 31, I think it was, as of June. But equally importantly, the discount to the peer group has blown out to 46%. And the reason for that is, as of December, the peer group multiples, pre the coronavirus, had actually all increased quite substantially. We took a call in December not to increase. In fact, we increased the discount to all of those and reduced our multiple. And as I said, post the coronavirus, many of those peers have come back by at least 10 to 15%. So, we believe we made the right call in December, but clearly there could still be some impact on valuation multiples post in the last quarter. In terms of the market, looking from a market perspective, as I said, the current peer group valuations would suggest, if they did suggest a value of 100, we apply a 46% discount to the peer group. That's increased from 31% as at June. So we've increased the discount to the peer group, which I think was the right thing to do, which would imply our valuation is held at 54 Rand compared to the 100. At December, the discount was 34, so the market was valuing that at 35. Currently, obviously, the discount has blown out to closer to 50% with the current share price, which would mean that the market is currently valuing the portfolio at around 25 Rand compared to the peer group at 100. On an NAV perspective, you can see the makeup there of the EV/EBITDA of 6.7 times, which we talked about. 5.1 times of that is equity with 1.6 times of debt, giving you a composite multiple of 6.7. If you assume the share price at 7.53 and you do the same assumption, you get to an assumed or an implied valuation multiple of 4.7 times on the portfolio. And just to give you some idea, that gives you a PE ratio of around about 11 times at 6.7 or 8 times at 4.7. If you put the current share price in, which is a simplistic assumption admittedly, the 4.7 times goes to 3.8, so the market's implying a 3.8 times EV/EBITDA multiple on the business or a 6 times PE ratio on the business at the current share price. Just looking briefly on the performance of the portfolio as a whole, despite being relatively downbeat over the last quarter, we were positively surprised about the portfolio performance in the last 12 months. So on the top left is the last 12-month sales performance by a portfolio company. And as you can see, 75% of our companies by value, or 70% by number, actually increased revenue year on year, which in a difficult environment is positive. On an attributable basis, revenue grew by about 5.3%, and on a value attributable basis, if you weight everything by our share in those companies is around about 7%. So somewhere between 5 and 7% revenue growth across the portfolio in relatively difficult times was, in our opinion, not a bad result. If you talk about the LTM EBITDA, which is the chart below that, 60% of our companies by number and 67% by value actually increased their EBITDA year on year. And again, in a tough environment where you've got inflationary costs increasing in line, as we said, with inflation, we didn't think that's a bad result. That resulted in about 3.8% growth attributable of EBITDA across our portfolio, or if you try and weight it by value, that number is closer to 5%. So somewhere between 3.8 and 5% growth in EBITDA across the portfolio. If you look at net debt, the top right-hand side, we said many of the companies have de-geared. 32% of our companies have no debt, which we think is a positive in this environment. When things are tough and you have these exogenous factors like we're having at the moment, these sorts of shocks, having less debt is obviously better than more. As I said, 32% of our companies have no debt, and you know, nearly 60% have some, you know, less than 1.5 times EBITDA. If you turn over the page onto the portfolio company, what we try to show here is the valuations as implied by the market. So very simply, this we took R7.53 as at December as a share price, and therefore implied what were the valuations that the market is imputing onto our various portfolio companies. And we show here both an EV/EBITDA number, but equally above there, effectively the PE ratio, EV over EBIT. Just to pick one out of a hat, obviously ChannelVest, the market sort of implied valuation there is around about 5 times EBITDA or 6.8 times PE ratio. And again, you can read across the portfolio companies. The main ones, obviously, ChannelVest, Kevro, Primedia, Synalytic, Vertice, and Ecotel. You know, that's 80% of the portfolio value. As I said, if you take the current share price into account, the 4.7 times goes to 3.8, and the effective PE ratio falls from 8.1 to around 6.5. So that's what the current market valuation of the portfolio is. Just in terms of liquidity analysis, we showed this chart before, and many shareholders appreciated it. What we wanted to show is liquidity post the break transaction. So simply, if you take our net commitments of $3.5 billion, we've invested capital of $1.6 billion as at December. The cash as at December was $277. We've completed a rights issue and raised $725, but there were some flowbacks, so call it $733. Of capital as the break transaction, and those would have been used. If you add those two together, that's effectively the money that was invested in the break transaction. We talk about a base facility here of $500 million. We can draw up to $700 million, but for now we assume a $500 million facility from RMB, which gives us a commitment gap today of $290 million. Just to repeat, what that actually means is all of the funds which we had commitments to asked us today to give us money, we would be short $290 million. We obviously recognize that's unlikely to happen. Those drawdowns happen over a five-year period. So what we show on the right-hand side is our best estimate today, including the break transaction, of our drawdown profile. So you will see that for the rest, the second half of the year, we're talking about drawing down $770 million. That's predominantly the break transaction and an equalization in Fund 7. And the key number to focus on this page is the blue dots, which is effectively the available liquidity. So at full year 2021, so June 2021, there would still be $380 million of surplus liquidity available. That said, the board remains very focused on, as I said at the beginning, ensuring we can follow a strategy of monetization of the assets before we make any new commitments to any new Ethos funds. I briefly just want to touch on the break transaction and what's been happening since the transaction was announced. For those of you who don't know, Ethos only took over the management company on the 1st of March. That said, a significant amount of work has happened over the last 3 months. I break it broadly into three buckets. First was the management company, ensuring that we could integrate those members of the break team who were going to join Ethos. That has happened. The entire team has joined. We're all now working seamlessly as part of one organization. So those members that we chose to stay on in Braid have joined Ethos. The other thing we needed to do was talk to the underlying portfolio company management teams to ensure there was stability and clarity as to the underlying purpose of the transaction. And we spent a huge amount of time both in South Africa and across in the UK, you know, with the management of those portfolio companies during the courses of December and January and February. In terms of the portfolio companies themselves, the key for us is to get stakeholder alignment around a value realization strategy, so ensuring that between us, management, and the board, we're all absolutely aligned on what we want to achieve in these portfolio companies. Those processes have started. We intend to have strategic game plans agreed by the time we have the next break board meeting in June, so we need to have agreed and aligned management behind a strategy by then, and then talk to what's our execution strategy over a 3 to 5 year period to monetize the portfolio. From a break perspective, there were many things that we've been focusing on over the last 3 months. Many of these have been achieved already or are soon to be done. Firstly, was creating alignment between the shareholders, the board, and the advisor to ensure we were strategically aligned. I can confirm that that has happened. We had a board meeting, break board meeting in February, which went very well. There's a cost optimization plan. I think we all recognize that the costs, the operating costs in the break model were significantly above what we think they could be, and we've started that process of rationalization. The first part of which is a redomiciling Great Malta to Mauritius, which will inform us, which will inform a reconstitution of the Brait board. That is all work in progress as we speak. Then finally, on the debt, we've finalized debt terms with the bankers, Standard Bank and RMB. We've completed the convertible bond, which was finally priced yesterday, I think it was, or certainly at the back end of last week. And what we've looked to is how do we ensure that we have a de-gearing focus on the ZAR facility that we have, and that process has started, and we're well down the track on that. Just turning to the next page, in terms of resource allocation, what we've done is put very senior people across our the Ethos portfolio together with the people that we've taken on from Brait to manage the various assets. So Antony and Bruce Baisley will be the two key individuals driving the Virgin asset. Jono Matthews is a senior partner at Ethos, together with Rolf Hartman from Brait, will be driving Premier. Stu McKenzie and Rolf on the Iceland account. Myself, Stuart, and Bruce Baisley on the new look DGB and Consol. So again, ensuring that we have continuity, we understand, you know, the business as well through having the Brait guys on board, but objective and some fresh thinking, hopefully, you know, from the Ethos team members. Just from a valuation perspective, I just want to show this page, which I think we showed at the time of the rights issue. If you start on the left-hand side of the page with the Brait NAV, that was the Brait NAV as at September, which was 38 Rand a share. Post the rights issue, that number would be 17 Rand a share, just because of the new issuance of shares that has happened. The rights offer happened at 660, and the in price from Ethos Capital, pre any fees that we got back, and there were fees that we got back of around 2%, was 7 Rand 99. So what the right-hand side of the chart shows is effectively what the in-price multiples were for Ethos Capital in Virgin of around 8 times, Premier of about 6.9 times, and Iceland of around 6, and therefore the implied discounts to the Brait NAV you'll see at the top. I said at the beginning, from a Brait perspective, one of the key things that we need to do is work on what are the valuations that those assets are worth on a net realizable basis, and we continue to work with the Brait board on that. Just the final slide, just to give people an idea of how we're approaching the Brait assets. Excuse me. The first thing we need to do is to sit with management, understand their key strategies, understand their financial performance, both historic and forward-looking, to determine, you know, are these businesses that we should be exiting now or in 3 or 5 years' time? Simply put, you know, if a business is growing at 25% a year, you obviously have the capacity to hold on to that asset for a significant period of time to grow shareholder value. If however, on a free cash flow yield and even dollar growth basis, it's growing at less than, for example, your cost of debt, well, that also gives you an example of what an idea of what you should be doing, i.e. selling the asset sooner rather than later. In terms of the competitive market positioning, being very crystal clear about which of these businesses have a sustainable right to win and how do we invest behind those strategies, and to ensure that we have a view of, is the competitive dynamic in this industry going to be more benign, better, or worse over a 3 to 5 year period? From a strategic implementation, many of these businesses have been, you know, driving certain strategies for some time. We need to, again, consider, are these strategies still aligned with the current exit or monetization strategy? If they are they monetizable over that period of time? And if they are, how do we invest behind those? And then finally, from a management and board perspective, I think it's imperative, one, we ensure we are all aligned with management, but most pertinently aligned economically and put the right incentives in place to get the right results. On the right-hand side, the caveat for all of that is, you know, from a valuation outlook perspective, I think we need to baseline each asset to say what's the net realizable value today, what do we believe the net realizable value will be in a 3 to 5 year period, and compare those two. And I think it talks to what's the outlook for the key valuation drivers, whether that be profitability, cash flow yield, multiple, et cetera. And I think ascertain where we are in the business cycle. So, for example, in UK retail, at an all-time low from a multiples perspective, you would assume that there's potentially some upward bias there. That may be different in other parts of the Brait asset portfolio. So, again, from a valuation perspective, we'll look asset by asset on that. And then finally, I think, and most importantly probably, is are the assets actually exit ready today? And actually, is there a market for the assets, whether it be the bidder universe is open to doing this, or the market available to IPO some of the businesses. So a lot of this thinking has happened. We will finalize this with management over the course of the next 2 months to present something to the Brait board early in June. I think that brings to an end the slides that I had, and I'm very happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star, then two to remove yourself from the list. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. We will pause to see if there are any questions. We have a question from Tinashe Hove from Laurium Capital. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Hi. Just two questions relating to the Brait portion of the assets. So clearly you've taken over as a management company, so hopefully you might share some more insights as to the situation within there. So from the rights issue, a lot of the debt at Centre has come down quite a bit, but clearly in the sort of operating environment we're in with coronavirus and such, looking from the outside in, there's a bit of a concern as to what will happen with the debt within the portfolio companies themselves. So while there might be more time at Centre, I think the refinancing, what is the situation for the individual portfolio companies like the debt in, say, a Virgin Active or a Premier Foods or an Iceland Foods? Can you give us a feel for what the covenants they require and what sort of pressure they're seeing for the individual portfolio companies?
Sure. So let me just touch a bit on that. Obviously, it's new days for us. I mean, obviously, we only took over. We have been working with the assets for 3 months. We, from a strategic perspective, obviously need to agree stuff with the Brait board before we can go out publicly and have a view on strategy. We're just the advisor to the Brait board, as you know. But just talking about the points that you raised, it's been an absolute focus of ours. I mean, did we see coronavirus coming? No. I mean, unfortunately, we'd love to say that we saw it coming. Does it have implications for the businesses directly or indirectly? For sure. More directly, probably for, say, a Virgin, who, for example, if you take Italy, some of their clubs have had to be closed given some of the restrictions that the Italian government have placed there, particularly around northern Italy. And the second degree impacts could be, for example, on a lesser Iceland. Iceland's issue is probably less around China and more around Italy from a sourcing perspective, but it's not particularly an issue for Iceland. Obviously, New Look sources a significant amount of its stock from China. So, you know, that's just a second degree impact it can have on a business. And if I take Premier as a case in point from the coronavirus, it's probably less directly impacted by it, but clearly, you know, consumer sentiment, and we don't know what might happen and what might unfold in this market if coronavirus does arrive in droves. So from a covenants perspective, if you look at, let's take it one by one, Premier is relatively lowly geared. It's about 2x net debt to EBITDA. It's de-geared again and probably able to pay down some form of shareholder loan, you know, back to Brait. So from an individual company perspective, that's not one that should be of concern. If you take Iceland, Iceland's liquidity really is in the form of the cash that it currently holds in the business, which is relatively significant. It doesn't have any capital repayment other than a £40 million repayment, which it's got the cash for, which I think is in June. The rest of its bonds are 2024. That said, you know, as we all know, when liquidity dries up and credit insurers, you know, have a view, you know, we need to manage that business for liquidity. But again, from at a high level, that is being managed, and we don't see any liquidity issues per se. And New Look's been managing this process since it did its CVA back 18 months ago. You know, it literally manages the cash flows on a day-to-day basis. We were extremely impressed by the way the management team there, you know, look at their business and particularly look at this liquidity issue. So, you know, can it have an impact coronavirus? For sure, is, you know, but I would say it's slightly less of a concern there. The one that I think you need to look at is obviously Virgin. we, you know, it depends how long Italy continues as it is. There are certain things in which I won't go into here, but certain mitigants to, you know, to what's happened in Italy, whether it be government support or actions that you can take with the landlords and staff, etc. So there's certain things that the team are working on which can mitigate it, but we're not overly concerned, to be honest, about the levels of debt there. But if it continues for an extended period of time, yeah, that situation could be different. We've made a lot of progress on a number of the liquidity initiatives that we talked about at the time of the rights issue. Clearly, this coronavirus has an impact on some of them, but if those come off, it will resolve many of the issues that, you know, that you've quite rightly raised. So, you know, do we sleep easy at night? No. Is it something that's top of mind for all of us? Absolutely.
Thank you. Cool. Yeah. Fair enough.
We have no further questions on the audio line.
Okay, should we wrap it up? If there are no other questions, again, guys, very much appreciate the time that you've taken. I know there's many things happening in the markets that are probably more important to everybody than this, so we appreciate your time. I'm absolutely available to answer any questions whenever. Feel free to shoot either Rowan or I an email. I'll endeavor to get you an answer as soon as we can. I know it's tough times for everybody. And we'd be keen to share as much information as we can. So feel free to reach out to us if there's anything we can do that can be useful to you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.